This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you very much indeed, Chair. I gambled, I suppose, in coming here today in that I was assuming, I was expecting that the government would not announce that the PLACE server was going to be discontinued. And though I was travelling yesterday, I gather it did formally announce then that it will be repeated this year, largely as it was previously. And therefore I want to concentrate on PLACE, but in a sense go back to what Rian was saying about the other exciting consultation initiatives and approaches that one needs, because ultimately I want to put PLACE in its place, the PLACE server in its place, by saying that it's not all that we might hope it can be, and it can't deliver all that we assume it might deliver. There are massive amount of data at the national and the local level, but PLACE has got some major difficulties, the PLACE surveys. The non-response bias is a major issue. There are questions about reliability compared to other different methods of surveys using random personal interviews. And there's a lot of uncertainty about the key performance indicators and how one benchmarks the different authorities. So though the PLACE survey is being repeated largely as it was before, we mustn't, in the new circumstances, assume it's the be-all and end-all of consultation and benchmarking for authorities. Just, again, to give you a wrap-up of what it was like last time and what it will be like next time, 1.3 million addresses were mailed with questionnaires, total questionnaires distributed, approaching 3.5 million, as you can see in the first, second and third rounds of the mailing, and the notional achieved sample, over 500,000 cases. But effectively, because of the non-response bias, because of the error margins associated with that, the effective sample is less than 250,000 cases. There's a small misprint on there. It should be the post and printing costs are approaching £3 million, and the other costs associated with the survey, of course, much, much, much higher still. This is a typical breakdown based on about 20,000 cases here of how the responses come in to the various mailings. The first mailing in October, then the second in November, and the third in December, distinguished, as you can see, by colour, and showing the number of responses one gets each week to those successive mailings. In this particular case, this is based, again, as I said, about here, in this particular case, about 20,000 responses. But believe me, that pattern obtained across the country largely, and that's how the 41% average response rate was achieved, noticing it varies between 22 and 62% response rates. This is a typical response profile. It's not an achieved sample, because you'll quickly see it adds to well over 100%. But it shows the real impact of non-response bias, whereby people aged 18 to 34, only about 15% of the people in that age group who received a PLACE questionnaire returned it, whereas nearly two-thirds of people aged 75 plus returned their questionnaires. Not much variation by ethnic group in those broad categories, not much variation by gender, but men less likely to return them to women. But overall, massive variation by age and massive variation according to relative deprivation scores in the response. So therefore, of all the kinds of bias that the PLACE survey was and will be subject to, the biggest is the non-response bias, because it's very, very difficult to control for that. It is also the case, of course, that when those questionnaires go out and when the less than 250,000 eventually come, so the 500,000 come back and the 250,000 when they're weighted, that you've had absolutely no control over who has filled those in and how seriously they're taken. This slide shows you, the blue lines represent all the local authorities in England, and the vertical lines show you the size of their response rate. Now, the aim was to have an effective response rate of 1,100 from everybody, and that was largely achieved. But when you take account of the non-response bias, what we call the effective sample goes down quite massively, as you can see, about 750 in fairly good cases, but then tailing off very rapidly when we calculate the effective response rate. Now, that means that any benchmarking or comparisons based upon that survey is subject to great difficulties. One difficulty is that minor differences in scores, remember these comparisons are based simply upon aggregate satisfaction scores, not even the distribution of opinion across the whole 5-point scale, but just the satisfaction scale itself. And very minor differences in scores can mean huge differences in where you appear in the rankings. And also the error margins I've referred to can mean that many comparisons are just impossible to make. Here is indicator 27, which is people's confidence that public bodies, local authority and police understand their concerns about antisocial behaviour, NI27. Everybody does poorly on this. There's the average for England, about, 27%, I think it is, the average, the thick black line. And the blue line, just bring my indicator up, blue line is showing the performance of all the authorities. And the vertical red lines here represent all the authorities in England. When you add on to that the error margins for each authority, which you see the banding here, the plus or minus error margins, it's clear that for 6 in 10 or more than 6 in 10 authorities on this indicator, it's impossible, and I say that wisely, impossible to say whether they're actually better or worse than average. The other point I made about very minor differences in scores leading to amazing differences in rankings, here we have authorities scoring, about 27% on this indicator. Here we have authorities scoring, less than 27%, isn't it? About 22%, here about 27%, and massive differences in rankings, and yet the differences in performance are incredibly minor in terms of the actual percentage scores. So questions about reliability then, because in terms of the method and in terms of the sampling. And actually, we find that random personal interviews yield much more favourable responses towards local government than the place survey it does. Here we see the average, this is the All England results here for your local council satisfaction there, that's aggregating fairly and very satisfied compared with other public services. When you look and disaggregate the very satisfied, there you can see that it really is very, very small compared to these other bodies. Now, interestingly, if this survey had been done, we have a lot of evidence to suggest that if this survey were done using proper sampling methods, using personal interviews, then local government would be scoring about 20 percentage points higher, 20 percentage points higher in terms of the satisfaction with its services. The other point I'll just touch on now fairly briefly here is that we assume that all of the factors you see listed down there contribute more or less equally, people might readily assume, to satisfaction with the council. In actual fact, it's much more complicated than that, because your morale towards the council, if I can put it that way, affects how you see these factors. So determining exactly which factors with which weightings influence your views of the council is very, very difficult to do. And in fact, we think that keeping the local area clean and tidy and treating public residents with respect, we think that they're important in keeping residents informed. But one which you might think is very important is value for money. And that slide shows incredible association, an 84% association. And as satisfaction with value for money with the council goes up, so satisfaction with the council increases. And the temptation is to think that value for money and satisfaction there causes or influences satisfaction with the council. In fact, it's much more difficult than that. Because, of course, you're not talking about real value for money. You're not talking about the average council tax level here. We're talking about perceived value for money, or should I even say assumed value for money, because people are totally uninformed about what actually is the value for money that they get from their council. And what seems to be the case, really, is that if they're satisfied with the council, then they'll be satisfied with the value for money. And they use the satisfaction of the council to generate their view, if you want, of satisfaction about value for money. And difficultly, in the survey, those two questions are put side by side. Council first, value for money next. And I think, effectively, they're both driven by the same issue, namely your overall morale towards the council. So, in terms of those factors then that drive or might drive satisfaction from the council, providing value for money is one which is driven, if you want, in the reverse, the counterintuitive direction. Also, we think influencing decisions is in the counterintuitive section. And even with local public services, actually, it's much more a reciprocal relationship than your view of public services straightforwardly driving your view of the council. But because of time, let me move on and just look now at the implications for total place. The implications of... I hope I haven't been too negative about place, because I believe it's a massive amount of data that it's very valuable and important to use. We've got to make the best use of it. But to go back to Rian's theme, there's much more than that that should be done in public consultation. Now, the problem, I think, or perhaps the challenge rather than the problem, is that the main indicators in place are about area and community. And they're driven, above all, by index of multiple deprivation. If you want, by the quality of life in those areas and in those communities. And those are very, very difficult indeed for councils and even other bodies in the context of total place to change. In fact, views about area, views about cohesion, views about quality of life, and of course underlying multiple deprivation and the social problems and factors there, are very difficult for the council to deal with. And it's therefore very difficult indeed for the councils and other bodies to improve performance on many of the NIs through service delivery, or as I've said, through value for money. And there's also a difficulty that council, if one takes these benchmarking comparisons and rankings too seriously, as many people are inclined to do when they're written down in black and white, then you risk penalising good councils which are struggling in poor areas. And I think that that really is a difficulty with the rankings that can be done. But thinking above all of total place then, the implications are that yes, partnership working is vastly important, and above all, something very difficult for councils to do, tackling deprivation, actually tackling research and tackling community problems is going to have an impact. The other extreme, I was at one conference when a council which had got a particularly poor ranking on value for money, when the public relations director of the council was saying, well, what we must do is to start to communicate our message about value for money much more actively. Now, the implications of what we're saying is that that kind of spin just won't work, and council shouldn't be focusing on that kind of spin. We think it would be counter-creative. They've got to focus upon the issues that are underlying, the social problems underlying in those areas. So understand and use the information, look at trends in satisfaction and dissatisfaction above all, and look at social cohesion problems, and evaluate issues like antisocial behaviour campaigns through, you know, a whole range of techniques and interagency workshops and seminars. I think that theme of agencies looking and working through the data together, the place data and other data, is going to be very important in the context of total place. Also, I think there has to be a place for more rigorous survey methodologies. If those effective sample sizes, remember I'm talking about the effective sample sizes, had have been achieved with random telephone or random face-to-face interviews, then you would have far more reliable data than you've got. And therefore I think there's a continuing place for county and district tracker surveys. When I talk about local government satisfaction levels actually being much higher in reality than they are when shown through place, I'm referring effectively to county and district tracker surveys. Also, we've got to have a wider range of questions. I gather, I was travelling yesterday, but I've heard briefly this morning that some of the cohesion indicators have been taken out of the new range of questions and new place survey. But actually, what we should be doing is looking at those kinds of issues in greater depth with a greater sophistication of questions, targeting those issues in certain kinds of communities. Because With the public expenditure cuts which are coming, as we've stressed, not only will have the impact upon the budget for public consultation, they'll have an impact on real social problems right across this country and upon social cohesion. And I think we need to look at those issues in the next few years with even more methods than we have done so far. Very briefly, two success stories. One, a project. One, a partnership. Just to show the wide range of things that can be done. From Birmingham City Council's People Panel, which I'm pleased to say we run for the council, we were asked by the council to recruit 20 mystery customers, ordinary citizens who would work for no pay one day a week for three months doing mystery customer interviews by telephone, or mystery customer calls, I should say, by telephone to housing services covering both tenant services and private sector services. When that was put to me by the council, I thought, this would be much better done from a call centre by our standard interviewers who could make all sorts of calls. But I've been now to the sessions when we've trained those mystery customers and they're doing that work, and it is fantastically impressive, fantastically convincing to hear ordinary citizens in Birmingham, with all the range of accents and experiences that they draw upon, actually talking to council officers about marital problems leading to housing problems, about tenant and landlord problems and so on, talking in these in-depth ways and getting the very different sorts of responses that elicits from different officers. Another success story, this time not a project but a partnership. We're also fortunate enough to work with the Hertfordshire Public Engagement Partnership, which is ambitious and distinctive, and I think it's particularly well established as a partnership because it includes all the authorities you see there, and they do have a lot of joint coordination, a lot of pooling of budgets and so on. And it also provides a fantastic basis for collaboration with the third sector. But that partnership with a single provider is a particularly sound one in terms of the trust, the collaboration and the communication that can take place between all of those authorities. And I think that that kind of partnership is going to become increasingly important in the context of Total Place. So I hope I've put the place survey in its place. It's going to be repeated. We have to make the very best of it, but it cannot be, and it should not be, the be-all and end-all of the whole consultation issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much.